have, not like, I'm just talking like goofy intrusive thoughts, right? We all have these sometimes.
Naturally.
I actually laughed out loud at one because I was walking Willow and I walked by like a UPS truck that was just parked by my house, my apartment. And the guy had just like sort of turned a corner to go deliver some packages. So there was nobody in the truck. And I had this brief thought of like, you could just walk in and just like, just take something. Why not? And then I had the instant follow on thought was like, if you get caught, just say you were like being a silly little scamp. Like that was literally the thought I had.
Ah, the scamp defense.
Just say like, I was just being a little goofy goose. Just being a silly goose. I would actually love it
if there was like a Johnny Cochran style lawyer who's like known for having this, like the little scamp defense.
The little scamp defense.
Like, Your Honor, I wish to argue not guilty by way of being mischievous.
By virtue of being a little scamp.
just a little guy.
Just the little guy.
Just the little guy.
Everybody, and welcome to Why Do We Watch This, the podcast where three friends watch a deeply troubled movie, talk about what they liked, what they didn't like, and how they would fix it while enjoying a themed cocktail. This is a mini episode, so none of that matters. I am your host for this mini episode, Brendan Drischler.
I am Chris Ravel.
And I'm Lita Handy.
That's all three of us. And to conclude our summer of failed franchises that were to have started and then sputtered out horribly upon the first attempt, we are talking about the 2004 action horror movie Van Helsing, directed by Stephen Sommers, starring Hugh Jackman and Kate Beckinsale. And Kate Beckincake, Richard Roxburgh, Shuler Hensley, Kevin J. O'Connor. Yeah,
really falls off after. I mean, it honestly kind of falls off after.
I was going to say
Beckinsale.
Yeah, no offense to like everyone else who, you know, is a very talented actor in their own right.
You may recognize Richard Roxburgh as the Duke from Moulin Rouge.
Yes, playing a wildly different role. Like, it's so weird seeing him as the Duke, who is like this little sort of like mincing, like, you know, little shit in Moulin Rouge.
Upper class twit.
Right. Yes, exactly. Very much an upper class twit. Here he's like a very big like cedar. Going full vampire.
I mean, it's one of many baffling choices about pretty much every performance in this movie. I also wanted to note, I'm really, really happy that you kind of changed up the phrasing a little bit in the intro and said deeply troubled, because this movie has a cracked foundation. It is a mess. It's maybe one of the worst movies I have ever personally seen, and I've seen this one in theaters.
Yeah,
I'm very excited to talk about it.
I have only seen this movie once to date, and I can agree with you. This is a mess.
And I think we're going to have a ton to talk about, especially about how things look.
Yeah. There's a lot to chew on this piece of crap here. So, you know, I look forward to getting into it with you guys 2 weeks from now. But of course, because it's us and because that is the premise of the podcast, which I just mentioned, if you were paying attention, if you weren't too busy looking at your fucking phone while I was talking to you just a couple minutes ago, you would know that we were going to have a drink to go along with it. And of course, the drink that we will be making for this is called The Brighter Side of Death, which is 3 ounces of Aperol, 3 ounces of Prosecco, 1 ounce of sparkling water, 4 strawberries and some bitters. So you just cut off the tops of the strawberries and slice them into little bitty pieces, add them to the shaker with Aperol and muddle it up, add ice to it and shake until it's mixed. Then you strain the mixture into a cocktail glass over ice, add your Prosecco, sparkling water, and a few dashes of bitters, give it a gentle little stir, garnish with the strawberry, and you're all set.
Ugh, that sounds pretty yummy.
Yeah, it's very summery, which is what I wanted. I always fucking love an Aperol spritz when it gets to be this miserable.
Was that a line from the movie, The Brighter Side of Death, or whatever?
Yes,
it was?
Apparently it is a line from the movie. I had to look up quotes because I remembered none of this.
And always apparently look on the brighter side of death.
I mean, right, which is an actual line in the song, Always Look on the Bright Side of Life too, by Monty Python. Yeah. I don't remember who says it. We'll have to keep our ears open. I'm sure if you go to IMDb and Control F, Brighter Side of Death, I'm sure you'll find it. I could not tell you who it was. Might have been Van Helsing, might have been Kate Beckinsale. Anyway.
Just to signal as one thing I'm really excited to talk about, I really just want to get into Dracula's wives and their bizarre transformation.
Yes, they're tits out for a big chunk of this movie.
Well, they also become weird, freakish monsters. Like,
yes,
anyway,
that's true, too.
I'm
Can they have been tits out? Was this rated PG-13?
It must have been because I went in high school.
I wonder that they're clothed, they're tits in when they're women, but as soon as they turn into like weird vampire monsters, they're tits out. So maybe it's like if they're not human tits, you can get away with showing them in a PG-13 movie. That's also, I guess they could be nippleless. What terrifying. Ugh.
Anyway. I know.
Anyway, we'll have so much time to talk about their nips in 2 weeks. For this mini episode, however, we're kind of going off briefly something that we had mentioned kind of in passing in our past Artemis Fowl episode, where we were talking about the difficulties you have in selling movies to people. And one of the things that we had mentioned in terms of like focus groups and testing and shit and all that is how so many trailers have to now begin with like a 2 second trailer for the trailer where they show like a scene that they think will pop and grab your attention and be like, the trailer for this movie is coming up next. For the love of God, don't scroll away from this video. Please don't click skip ad. And it sort of got us to thinking a little bit about movie trailers in general, how they are now, how they might have changed, and how they function as selling a movie. So honestly, this is just the mini episode about movie trailers. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, I find it so, I know that we kind of, again, we talked about it a little bit during the Artemis Fowl episode, but like, I understand that they're trying to compete with a very short attention span, like the attention economy or whatever you want to call it. And I understand that, but I do find it really bizarre, especially if it's a situation like I've clicked it on YouTube or, you know, like I've clicked the link to watch the trailer. Yeah. I don't then need to be given another gimme. Like,
right, you've already
right
sold
there.
Me.
This is what's coming. I'm like, I'm aware. That's why I clicked on the trailer to watch.
Yeah. I don't know if that is like a YouTube, like if it's for something else, like, I don't know. Like, is it something they put on? I don't know. I don't know if that 2 second thing is for, but I do understand, I guess, not that I want to, but I understand the fear that executives might have that you might like click on a trailer and someone might click on a trailer and within 1 second be like, "Bog's boring."
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then close the window. Right. Or back out.
Yeah. One of my other thought is typically these trailers, sometimes these trailers play as ads, right? And I can imagine they probably do that little mini trailer thing because they want you to not hit skip.
Yeah.
So what they want to do is get you that title ASAP.
Right. Right.
Well, Chris, and I wouldn't know much about that because I have YouTube Premium.
That must be so nice for you. I'm one of the common people.
Yes. I don't see ads on YouTube, but that's what I was wondering is like, do they ever show us ads? I am ad blind.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they do. I mean, the example that I was thinking that the one video that I had watched had mentioned, which again, I should have looked up the name of this, whoever did this video and mentioned it. But do you guys remember the movie Brightburn at all?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do.
Okay. So he specifically called out the trailer for Brightburn, which starts like if you watch just the actual trailer, it starts with a sort of like idealistic, like, you know, like, oh, like this little kid, like we've got a little kid, and like he's you know, he's a very normal little kid, and then it's like, oh no, he has superpowers, and oh no, like it's a gradual build-up from like, you know, a sort of like a bait and switch moment in the trailer where it's like you watch the trailer and you're like, oh, a sweet movie about a child, and all of a sudden it's like, oh no, the child has superpowers and he might try and kill us all. But if you watch it with the little like 2 second clip beforehand, it immediately starts with like the kid's eyes glowing red and like glaring. It's like Brightburn trailer. It's like, well, now you've just spoiled the entirety of the trailer. Like, right. You've completely ruined any sort of like shock or impact this trailer, which you have presumably gone out of your way to test market to a million different people might have. Go ahead,
I have a hot take. I do have. This is time for my first hot take.
Yeah, take it out.
I don't think that. I don't care about that. I don't think that matters. I think like, I don't know how you're gonna get people to watch. We've talked. There's another article that talked about like movies that are trailers that sort of like portray the wrong vibe for the movie.
Right.
Where it's like this, they made it seem like a sort of weird, like heartwarming family comedy, but it's like like that movie with Adam Driver with the industrial chemical accident, where it's like a fucking weird ass psychodrama.
What? Which one is this one?
Oh my god, you know what I'm talking? Oh my god, hold on.
I wish I did.
That sounds interesting.
Oh. The Netflix one, right? The
chemicals
fucking,
movie.
Fucking what's it called? I know what you
white
mean.
Noise.
Yeah, I do. Yes, White Noise. For some reason, you said Adam Driver, and in my head, I was like Adam Scott. Like, no. For some reason, I was like, that's not right.
You know, so I thought you were going to say Marriage Story, and I was like, yeah, you're
no.
right. That it's not a rom-com.
My Go ahead, brain has so much thought in it before you will forget. So everyone needs to stop talking and let me finish. So the trailer for White Noise had made it seem like a sort of whimsical indie, sort of like that bloke with the bright colors, Wes Anderson.
Like a quirky family drama.
Yeah, like, it's funny. But it really, it's like some sort of weird, surreal psychodrama that plays out. And with Brightburn, which is essentially like, what if Superman was a horror story? Mm-hmm. I don't know how you're going to not. First of all, I don't know how. This is my first point. It's not even the most important point. But the first point is, I don't know how you don't do that trailer and explain quite clearly to audiences, this is about a kid with superpowers. That's going to be important. Number two is, I don't think it matters that you should start with that point so much in the trailer, or like that you show that at all, or that you sort of reveal things that happen in the movie. I think it's mostly the trailer's job to convey what kind of vibe we're going into, because at the end of the trailer, you still don't know like what happens at the end of the movie. Like, does the kid, does he like feel bad at the end? Does he sort of come back from that sort of dangerous point? Or is he a good kid? Or is he a sociopath? I've never seen the movie, so I don't actually, I've read a Wikipedia synopsis of it one time. I don't want to see it. I don't care about it enough. But like, so I don't actually know, but it doesn't answer what I think are the more important salient questions about the narrative. Like, Is this just a good kid and he's reacting badly to the situation, or is this a bad kid? Or like, well, I don't, you know, I feel like I haven't seen the specific trailer, but I feel like I would still have a lot of those same questions after I watched the trailer, even if I saw him glowing with red eyes.
Yeah, I guess the point that's being made for something like that is just the fact that there is such an effort being made to create like a 2-minute teaser for this movie, which includes sort of like the fake out of like lulling you into thinking it's one thing and then like being like, aha, but it's actually about X. And it's just the sort of thing where it's like, why are you going through all this trouble when you could just do like a 5-second TikTok video and just be like, it's about a kid who's Superman, but evil. Go see Brightburn or something like that. I think it's more just like, because I do agree with you. Obviously, at the end of the trailer, you are going to find out that, yes, this kid has superpowers and he seems to be evil in some way or another. So like, yes, on the one hand, like I do agree with you for something like that. But I think it's just the idea of sort of, it kind of comes back to storytelling in a way, I guess, kind of the idea of like trying to distill a story to its basic elements for like 2.5 minutes. So you can convey that and excite people.
Are you saying your problem is with the structure of the movie trailer? You want that movie trailer to have a narrative flow similar to the movie? Like, is your problem only when they show the kid's eyes glowing, or that they show the kid's eyes glowing at all?
No, my problem is just that like you see something like that with no lead up whatsoever, because it's an exciting image that people will sit up and be like, ooh, what's this about? Evil boy doing something, versus sort of like trying to tell you the story of the movie. Does that make any sense to you? Like,
I guess, it does. But doesn't it start with normal? Didn't you just say it starts with normal kid stuff?
The trailer for the movie does, yes.
As it exists now.
Right.
The one,
but I'm also,
like,
I mean, and again, also, you know, Brightburn might be a bad example because I've also never seen Brightburn, but I would imagine also the movie Brightburn opens kind of with like sort of a fake out in that respect too, right? Where you're probably supposed to think like this is a relatively normal kid or some shit like that until things start going wrong. And so to me, it's more like saying I could see a movie, or I could just like have someone walk up to me and be like, oh, at the end of the movie, it turns out that this guy killed the other guy. You know, like it's kind of like saying there is an art to telling a story in miniature versus just wanting to have someone run up to you and be like, it's about this.
Yeah, I would agree. I think this is a hard example to talk about because neither of us have seen the trailer or the movie.
I've seen the trailer, but not the movie. But yeah, no, I agree, because like it does a disservice because we've not seen this.
My thing is, I think you could get at least the important stuff out there without necessarily, because I think the twist that the kid is potentially evil is an interesting one. And I don't know, if I was cutting the trailer, I would want to bury that a little, but still give them an indicator that like something intense is still going to happen in this movie. So I think you can show small kid. I think you can show superpowers. I think you can try to imply that there's a lot of like accidental uses of it that lead to something bad. But because I'll give another example. There was the trailer, can't remember the title, but it's basically about a bunch of like mafia goons kidnap a young girl who's a ballerina. And the twist is you think she's very helpless, but she's actually a vampire. And the movie is about her just massacring them. The trailer gives it away immediately, which I think is a bummer.
Here's the thing, though. I feel like you're straying into something different, which is to say, when do we find out that this kid is a vampire? If you find out that this kid is a vampire at the end of Act One, I think that's fair game for a trailer. If the twist is at the end of the movie, where all of a sudden, like, and all this time, 90 minutes have passed, and you didn't know I was a vampire, and now I'm going to murder you all immediately, that would be like, yeah, that's bullshit. But like, that's different, because on the one hand, this trailer is designed to sell you on what the movie is about. If the movie is about people kidnap a girl and she turns out to be a vampire, I think that's fair game.
Yes.
If it is something where it's like, you know,
If it's about they kidnap a girl and then one by one they start dropping like flies and it's right. a big mystery.
Right.
We then don't want to know why they're right. dropping like flies.
Right. But I think like, because if you're trying to sell a movie like that and your premise is girls kidnapped turns to be a vampire and you have a trailer that's just a little girl gets kidnapped by mafia men, what will happen to little girl? And then you go to the movie like 30 just... minutes in, she like grows fangs and starts killing people. Then I would be like, oh, this is not what I was sold on.
Maybe, but I think you could still potentially show in a trailer, these guys are dying for some reason, you just don't necessarily show who's killing them. I think that's still something you could bury without necessarily misleading people, just so they get a nice surprise. Because I will say, in general, I think would be trailers annoyed. Give too much away.
I mean, I would be annoyed if I didn't want to see a vampire movie and they yeah. didn't tell me that it was a vampire movie.
Again, this being an example using a movie I've never seen before, it would all come down to me as to how this story was structured. If you find out within like the first act of the movie that this kid is a vampire, then I think that's fair game. If you do not find out, then I think that that's something that you should obviously keep to yourself. But, you know, presuming I would assume just based on your description of this movie that we find out pretty early on that the one killing
I believe
is
it is like
girl.
45 minutes in.
Okay, yeah, so then like if what Lee said, if it was a story about like a girl who's kidnapped, all of a sudden people start dying and it's like, oh no, is there a monster here, is someone murdering us? And then you find out at the end the little girl is secretly a vampire, yeah, that would be bullshit to tell you in a trailer. But if you find out early on that it is, then I think that's just effectively telling you what the movie is in fact about.
Go ahead, Brendan. You finish.
I was just going to say, like, I do agree that obviously there are times when movie, you know, trailers do reveal too much. Like, there was the article there were several articles that we had like read and like, you know, briefly talked over before going to this. And one of the things that one or two of them called out is the trailer for, I think it was Terminator Genesis or something.
Yes.
One of the Terminator series where you find out that John Connor is a robot in the movie trailer, which is something that doesn't come out in the movie until relatively late, which is like a huge thing to reveal in the movie trailer. And there was a brief interview with the director where he said something like, yeah, apparently the studio was just trying to find like a hook to make people think like, oh, this is not the same Terminator I've seen before. This is something new and exciting. So they decided that they had to give that away in the trailer, which is insane. Again,
yeah, that's crazy.
If this is something that happens early in the movie, fine, by all means tell it. But this is something that, to my understanding, comes in later in the movie. You find out that he is actually a machine, which is an insane thing to spoil in a trailer.
Yeah.
And so it's such a powerful reversal. Like,
yeah.
That's a good point. That's a good example to use, because I have not seen that movie. So I read that article we're talking about. I actually think that a lot of the other examples the article gives are nonsense and don't matter. To Chris's point about like movie trailers giving too much away, and maybe he's not talking about these examples either. Like, maybe you would agree, Chris, that these examples are nonsense. But like, one of the other examples is that Free Willy shows the will going free, and I'm like,
right. I agree.
My guy,
I think that's
the movie
bullshit.
Is called Free Willy,
right?
But like, and like Castaway shows. Tom Hanks
coming back.
And that there's two reasons that that's okay. Number one, it doesn't matter if he gets back, if you tell us that he gets back or not. We're not going to see him. We go, does he get back or not? We're going to see what's the journey. What's the experience that he goes through? Number two, it could be a dream seek. He could be pretend, you know, like you could have shown an out of context scene where he has a dream about returning and then we find out that he doesn't. So it doesn't even have to be real in the trailer.
This was similar to what you said with The Martian, too, where, you know, if the trailer is indicating that he's getting back home, like, yeah, I think we can all assume that there is going to be an attempt to be made to get him back home.
Yes.
But the story of The Martian is not, will he get back home? The story is more like, how will he survive and how would they try to get him back home?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like the sort of message you make with that ending, like there are multiple ways of saying, oh, Tom Hanks made it back or Tom Hanks didn't make it back. I have not seen Castaway. I believe he comes back and like, his wife has like moved on and married someone else and such.
Yeah.
There could be a version of that ending where like, what a happy ending. His wife has been waiting for him and gets back together.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Presumably it's kind of a bittersweet ending because he comes back and like life has moved on without him and he's been legally dead or something.
Right.
And the same thing with The Martian. In The Martian, it's very much like a triumph of human will and cooperation and collaboration.
Yeah. And like, but it could easily have, which is really cool.
Yeah. It could easily have been this like, we did it, but you know, the space program is absolutely fucked now. Like, and it's sort of like a, not, you know, like a bad, you know, a downer.
Right.
Could have had different context and tones to that ending that you don't necessarily see from the trailer.
Right. I would say that, like, going off of that, I think, like, the moral of this is kind of like determining, like, the vibe that you want the trailer to have and determining the theme of the story, because it's less important that you're telling what happens in the story and more important that you're telling, like, what the theme is that it's focusing upon. Because, again, it's not a question of how, of like, does he get back? The movie could work either way, frankly. Yeah. It's more of a question of, like, what is the journey going to be? So I think, frankly, that's it. It almost kind of reminds me a little bit of how I don't even know if they still do this, but for a long time, Pixar used to do movie trailers that were like explicitly teaser trailers. Like, they would just basically make like a short that was just like, here are some of the characters interacting with each other. And honestly, like, I kind of think that's a thing that maybe more like, it doesn't work so much obviously for all movies, but like, for sometimes it can sort of just be nice to be like, this is an introduction to like the world and the characters. It's not showing you anything you'll see, but it's giving you an idea for like the themes, the setting, what we're going to
grab. I wanted to bring up as an example, not Pixar, but adjacent, which is the initial, what's called, it's called not the official trailer, but the official teaser trailer for How to Train a Dragon 2 was like a minute and a half to 2 minutes, where it was just a sequence that I think is like almost directly from the movie with maybe some edits, but it's where Hiccup and Toothless are like testing out his new flight suit.
I remember this,
And it's, they play this song, which I also want to talk about music and trailers briefly after this, but they play this song that's like not from the score, but it's just like a sort of canned trailer song. And it's just literally the scene, and it's kind of like gets the important bits of like, oh, they're flying. It shows how the confidence of and their abilities have grown. And like Toothless uses this like sort of squirrel suit made of like leather or whatever. And then it just kind of ends. And he's in this like helmet, this sort of like, you know, badass Viking helmet. So you can't see him. And then it just like ends with like him taking off the helmet, and you see like, oh, he's an older teenager now. Oh, no, he's hot now. and that's how it ends. And it's like, you understand, first of all, it's, maybe some of this is shorthand and easier because it's a sequel, so you obviously know who Hiccup and Toothless are.
Right.
But because you do, you just have to like show us what we're gonna get. You're gonna get more of this vibe. These two like guys working together, doing some cool things.
That's kind of what we've come to, is as long as the trailer is aligned with the theme and vibe, if, as long as it's communicating the essential idea of what the movie is about, but does not telegraph each and every plot beat, especially not the one, not ones that are maybe like a later act twist, right? But I think you could achieve that with like a Pixar style thing. I actually think that would be really interesting to see, because then you're not really spoiling anything about the movie, but you are giving them a taste of what it's like, which I think is probably the most important thing, right?
Yes.
Well, I think for the sort of Pixar thing, right, I'm not sure what those examples are, if it's like, because again, with How to Train Dragon 2, I know that they didn't have to like animate anything special.
Right.
It's a scene from the movie, which is sort of like shortened and cut for context.
Right.
So I don't know if the Pixar ones are that, or if they do something special, but I guess like
the Pixars are like their own standalone thing.
Yeah,
like they were made explicitly as a trailer.
Okay. Yeah. I could see like where that gets expensive if it's animation, and if it's not,
right,
it's like, what are you going to do? I know you had talked briefly about the sort of era of like you off in the chat thread about like, when directors would just sort of come on to the trailer and be like, come watch
right,
my movie.
Right, be like, oh, hello there. Yeah,
hello,
like,
their audience.
We're shooting a movie here. Let me tell you what it is.
And the actors
I
would
find
be
that
there.
Charming.
I think it doesn't work for, like, you know, Schindler's List too, but...
Right, I mean, that's the thing too, because, like, when you look at, still, like, I was saying how the trailer for Citizen Kane is, like, Orson Welles' voiceover being like, we're making a picture called Citizen Kane. And then, like, you'll cut to, like, one of the characters, like, one of the actors in character on the telephone being like... So like,
oh,
Charlie Cade, he's like, he's the greatest guy I've ever met. Someone else be like, no, he's a jerk. Boo, I hate him.
It's just so, like,
it almost makes it seem like a comedy where it's just like, everyone's all a buzz about who like Charles Cade is. And it's just like, this really doesn't give you like the vibe of the movie whatsoever. All it does is it does make you wonder who is this Kane guy, but the way it's portrayed is almost sort of like goofy or silly in a way. And maybe at the time it wouldn't have been seen that way, I don't know,
but
like
the movie is not goofy or silly.
Me watching this, I would expect it to be sort of like almost like a sillier Great Gatsby sort of thing, where it's like, we all want to know who this guy
who's
is, we're also
Charles
interested
Kane
in him. Right. And then it turns out it's like, no, this is like the exploration of like what makes like this monstrous man a monster.
Right.
Yeah.
How bad is William Randolph Hearst?
Turns
I
out
do kind
bad.
Of miss the era of like, I think we should just try it once with a new movie of having like a sort of transatlantic narrator.
Yeah.
Yes,
sort of
me
describes
too.
What the movie's
that.
About to us while the scenes sort of play in the background. And then
like, sometimes they're going to give us audio and sound or music from it, but sometimes it's just voiceover
just,
over
just
footage.
Hyping up the cast, like two-time Oscar award winner Tom Hanks.
Yeah. It is
Laura Tierney, as you've never seen her before.
It is like one of those things too, when you think about how in the 90s we had all those trailers that were very big on like very serious voice in a world.
Yeah.
And how like that's like lapsed into self-parody at this point.
Yeah.
So it does sort of feel like, I don't know, maybe we should head back in that direction a little
bit.
We have
a new era of self-parody, I propose. And currently that would include. So, okay, well, there's the trailer thing, but I want to talk about the music of trailers because I feel like there's a few eras that I want to talk about. There's like the 90s era, which is like obnoxious needle drop hell. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Or, mm-hmm. And then frequently, if the song has to change halfway through, especially if it's a comedy, there will be a record skip sound.
Yeah.
In the trailer. Early 2000s to the 2010s, you had like How to Train a Dragon 2, there would be these like sort of, I don't know, factories that would pump out music, or they would just reuse certain music. It would not be the score of the movie.
Right. It's just they're I don't want to say they're not public domain, but they're made explicitly to be used in trailers without any regard for what the movie is and more in regard for the tone you're going for.
Yeah. There's a group Audio Machine. They did Beyond the Clouds, which is in How to Train Dragon 2. They also did Prologue Birth, which is in some other movie trailer. Also, the PM's love theme from Love Actually was used in the trailer for both The Aviator and for the 2005 Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely not I know that I can't think off the top of my head, but like I've heard like the Beetlejuice score used in other movie trailers too. Like it's definitely not unheard of to just appropriate stuff like that.
Yeah, so there would be this decision to just like grab whatever music is on hand because the composer's still not done.
Right. I mean, a lot of times it is just that. Yeah.
And now we've entered this era. Not for like for a certain type of movie, right? Where we have to get like, you always know what's going to happen too. We're going to get like a sort of slow, downbeat, minor key version of some bubblegum pop song.
A theme, or I mean, I was even thinking for things like, you know, even for like Avengers Endgame, it was like the Avengers theme, but played by like a slow, plinky piano, you know, or it's designed to be like, this is the theme you remember, but it's deadly serious.
It's spooky,
now.
Yeah.
You also remember that hot second when they would use children's choirs to do covers of songs to make them seem poignant or serious?
Yeah.
Like, they had that children's choir cover of Creep to play over the first trailers for The Social Network.
Yep.
Which was really interesting. Like, it's a cool choice, but I do think it is, because aren't there literally just like you mentioned before, there's like canned music people will use for these things sometimes.
Right.
Yeah, but that has definitely stopped happening. I have not seen that in years. There was definitely a movie that did, I forget what song it was Lana Del Rey covering some famous song, but it was real spooky. I think it was one of the shitty Disney live action
movies. Oh, well, so yeah, Maleficent's end credits uses like a Lana Del Rey cover of Once Upon a Dream from
Sleeping Beauty. That might have been it. Yeah.
I kind of like her cover. It's kind of creepy sounding, but I don't know. It's more successful than the movie, Ba-dum-cha.
It might have been it, but it might have been that she did something else for like a later trailer.
Maybe that's possible too.
I just need to remember like honest, at one point like laughing when it came on of like, oh my god, of course. Song like No Place Like Home, but it's made to sound ominous.
Yeah, or like Over the Rainbow or whatever, like done in like a very slow, like sad sort of version. And like it does feel like this we are now at the level where this has in turn descended into self-parody, and now we're gonna have to find like a new language to use for movie trailers at this point. But
to be able to look at, but I think would probably take a long time to study and figure out. I would love to know if over time, is it a shorter and shorter period of time that it takes for us to burn a trend like that out? Just because, I don't know, we just hit that same formula so aggressively all the time. Like, do we run through its shelf life faster over time?
I mean, I don't know about like the sort of mainstream cycle of things. It does feel like memes burn out really fast these days.
I think this is just sort of like the end result of the internet, right? Like this is just sort of because like all of this can be done so quickly, we get tired of these things.
We're approaching the internet singularity.
Yes.
Well, because if it's on the internet, you can engage with it as many times as you want, whenever you want. So it's like the whole thing about eating grilled cheese all the time and then you fucking hate grilled cheese just because it's like something else, please.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I mean, just to briefly also think about like the other thing with trailers, two things that I had sort of thought of briefly when we were talking about this that I think sort of effectively do a good job and are kind of different from the trailers, it goes a little bit back to sort of the How to Train Your Dragon 2 thing, but I remember the original trailers for both The Lion King and Elf. For The Lion King, it was just the Circle of Life opening scene. That was like the original trailer for Lion King, which I think is like great. Like that's honestly a really
smart choice.
Yeah, like it effectively shows you like what this is about, like the vibes is, you know, it's about the Circle of Life, right? It's about like this baby lion who's presumably going to grow up and become like the titular Lion King. And with Elf, it was the scene where he is in the doctor's office with the little girl, talking to the little girl, and he's like,
it's a cute scene,
right? And it also like very neatly encapsulates the plot of the movie by like presumably by coincidence, where she's just like, oh, are you okay? And he's like, no, like I'm doing fine. Like, hi, I'm Buddy, I'm an elf, I used to live with Santa, but now I came down here. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like one of those things where it's like, because it is a scene of the movie, it's just sort of like a charming little example of like what you can expect to see from the movie itself without feeling too much like it's dragging you through the entire plot of the movie. And honestly, it's sort of one, it is kind of one of those things where like I don't necessarily think that you should try and write a movie with the intent of having a scene that encapsulates the movie that can be then interpreted as a trailer unto itself. But it does feel kind of like maybe that's something we should be looking at more. Like maybe we should try to do something along those lines a little more, especially if you have something like, you know, like some sort of like a talkie drama or something. Like it might be nice to just sort of like show like a scene from that movie that can be encapsulated or even edited down into like 2 minutes that gives you a feel for what you would expect.
Well, it kind of works really well for like heist or spy thriller movies as well, where it's like there's presumably just a lot of setup you have to cover, and it kind of it's helpful to explain that in the trailer to be like, this is the kind of thing. And it's in a heist, it'll usually be like, we need this guy and this guy,
right, this guy's good at this thing, and this is what we're trying to do, so like let's start thinking of ideas. So yeah, like it does sort of feel like maybe that's kind of something that we need to go back to a little bit. I don't know, like maybe that would sort of solve some of these issues that we're having. I'm not sure.
I don't know why I just thought of this, but do you remember I feel like we used to laugh at this together, Brendan, but it was like the Unstoppable trailer where the train can't stop. And
oh yeah,
it's, I mean, like, I remember the movie. That
it's what's his nuts, oh my god,
Chris Pine, Denzel,
Tony Scott,
Denzel Washington, yeah. And he's like, it, they have to, you know, they're on this train and can't stop, and at one point I'm pretty sure the trailer ends with this shot where it's just like, talking about like the train is, it's going to be like a detonate, like a nuclear bomb or something, if it reaches the city or some shit like that. Is one of the, like, you know, buzz lines. They have to get this train to stop somehow. And it, like, literally, I think the end of the trailer is just like a millisecond shot of Denzel with his like sort of head out the window of the train going, ha ha ha. And it's like the funniest thing to me. Like, I don't really remember the I guess it appears like after the movie information. So like, I'm not even sure why he's laughing or what it's just happened.
Right.
But it's just it was the funniest choice to me. No, I'm not sure what it was supposed to feel.
I was going
to
say, that almost feels like something you do just because, you know, people will be like, what the fuck is this moment?
In
this
movie? Yeah.
Like, it's one of those like, well, at least you're talking about it, you know?
It's like a very
But that is smart because I would legitimately want to be like, okay, but what's the context for this? I would
love to see. Why is he laughing like a weird? I will pay $12 to figure out why he's laughing like a weird.
if only it were $12.
I'm probably making it weirder, but it was just like him sort of like unhinged, like as if he was like an old timey train driver, like with his head out the window.
Yeah. Waving his hat.
Waving his little train hat. Oh my God. It sticks with me. You know, I'm just saying, maybe
there you go. It was a good trailer.
Yeah, it stuck with you.
Does anyone else have any other trailers they remember as like a good example of what to do? Because I had one, which was the How to Train Dragon one.
I have one as an example of maybe what not to do. I'm sorry to go in an opposite direction there.
So but, negative, Chris.
Do either, you know, I'm such a contrarian, but do either of you remember, they kind of do it a little less now, but A24 used to cut trailers for all of their movies that would make them all look like horror movies, all of them. Mm-hmm. And the one that really sticks in my mind in particular is they have this one movie that they released several years ago called It Comes at Night.
I thought you were going to say Men.
And the trailer is like, oh no, like there's like someone banging at this ominous looking red door, and there's like, they give you these like cutaway scenes of people kind of panicking or looking scared, and they repeatedly imply it's about like some kind of monster or something comes at night, but the whole movie is actually just about in a potentially post-apocalyptic situation, like this group of people band together and then they have a lot of drama. That's it. Like, it's not a horror movie at all, but I just find it interesting of like, was the calculation there to make it look like something else because that would have maybe they had some research that showed that was more popular with the demo they wanted to reach.
Right, but that's also...
I always find that to be a puzzling choice, why you would want to make your movie seem like an entirely different genre.
Well, that's always the kind of part of the issue, too, because the thing that I always remember, and I mean, it's kind of this way with a lot of musicals, but the trailer for the movie version of Sweeney Todd has almost no singing in it. There's like one line where Johnny Depp's like, "I will have vengeance," and then like that's all you get. And the rest of it is just like, you know, scenes from the movie. And it's one of those things where studios do that because they're like, well, we've done studies and it turns out that people don't like musicals, so we want to trick them. And it's like, why would you want to do that? Because then people are going to leave and be mad, right, that you tricked them into seeing something that they did not want to see. And then they're going to tell people, don't see this. It's not what the trailer leads you to believe it is. So it's like, I get that on some level, you're hoping that this will like work in terms of either just being a big opening weekend and then have a massive drop off, or you're hoping that the movie will be so good that people won't care that you tried to deceive them. But nonetheless, like, you're risking just annoying people by doing something like that.
I've never seen anything in any research whatsoever that says companies care about annoying people.
That's a very good point. Also, I guess if you've bought the ticket, I guess they either like,
yeah,
can you, like, but it's good enough that, well, you don't care.
That's what
but
I'm saying.
Also,
can
like,
you still,
I don't
can
care
ask
if you
for
care.
A refund at this
money.
Point? Like, can't you, if,
I have
if the
no
movie's
idea.
Only like 15 minutes long, can't you go out and be like, I had no idea this was a musical. Give me my money back. I'm leaving.
I don't know. Like, I don't know. Who,
I don't know.
Who would get benefits in that situation? The theater or like the.
Yeah, I don't really either.
I don't know if, like, you can take it up with legally.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, wasn't that
maybe
the with, like,
maybe
the
it would wind up
trailer where people were grumpy that there were shots that were like shot for the trailer or for an earlier version of the movie that were in the trailer. And then they were annoyed that there like wasn't a shot of Jyn Erso like standing in a hallway while lights were flicking on. And it's like, oh, fuck you.
How dare.
Guys. Yeah, like, right. How dare you not include a scene of someone standing in a hallway? Yeah. That had made me think that this was going to be this the type of movie where people stand in hallways. And then it turns out it's the type of movie where they do not stand in hallways.
I was going to say, though, to go back to like it being an A24 movie. Yeah. I think that there's a thing about sort of these smaller production houses having like a vibe. And it's like A24, like they came into horror big. And I think all of their trailers lean into like weird, no matter what else.
That is true.
Even if the movie's
kind
not
of
weird.
Yeah, I think it is kind of like
the other one I think
of
is Searchlight.
Like,
do you know like Searchlight Pictures? If you've ever seen like
yeah,
a Searchlight
like
picture trailer, they're all like, it's all like sort of like either full on maudlin or like super sentimental style. Like they're all the same. Like if you watch one Searchlight trailer and then watch another one, you can see the vibes like it's just the same.
Twee, emotional indie.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think that probably even if A24 took on this project that was like more of a straight drama, they're like, I don't know, people like A24 because we're weird, we're wacky, we do Midsommar.
Right. I mean, it feels like it's the sort of thing where you have like the two genres of A24 trailers, one where it's sort of like more kind of like an indie quirky sort of drama comedy, and one where it's like really fucking weird. And so it's like your movie must fit into one of these two boxes.
We do the goat
the
child
trailer.
Movie.
Yes.
We do Lady
Lamb.
Bird or we do
it's
goat
Lamb.
Child.
Yeah, Lamb, that's right.
And they also made that look like a horror, but it's not really. It's weird.
No,
it's weird
as
fuck,
but
it's not a horror movie.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess that's one of those things where it's like, how do you effectively distill like, oh, this is a weird movie without being like, but it's not horror. It's
again,
just weird.
I think like whoever is like at A24 that does trailers or whatever, I think they just dug themselves into this hole. They're like,
yeah,
I mean, you might frankly at this point, like you might just need to shake things up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this was a lovely little convo we had. I'm so glad we solved all the problems with trailers and now they'll be fine from now
on. Exactly. And if we have more we want to talk about with them that we forgot about, we'll do a part two at some point. Why not?
Yeah.
That bad.
All right. Well,
yeah,
guys, good to see you again.
So good
thanks
to see
for
you.
Chatting. Good to see you all. Nice to be here. Lee, always a pleasure. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our Van Helsing episode. So get ready for that crap.
Oh,
until then.
Bye. Bye.